puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
And it's time now for Abandoned Manitoba, where we say good morning once again to Gordon Goldsboro from the Manitoba Historical Society. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Nolan.
So remind us of the clue that you gave us last week.
Well, we're going to consider a remarkable set of maps, which show us what the neighborhood looked like around a large abandoned building near the corner of Portage and Main here in Winnipeg. And it gives you a view of what the building looked like and the area around it over a century ago.
So which building in particular are we going to be talking about then?
It's the Key Wayden Building, a seven-story office tower on Portage Avenue East. That's a portion of Portage Avenue that extends east of the main intersection. The building was constructed in 1909, primarily as office space for a variety of companies. Its name, by the way, was a variant of Key Wayden, which is an Ojibwa word meaning northwest wind. In 1928, the Key Wayden Building was purchased by two businessmen, Benjamin Jacob and John Crowley, both of whom who had ties to the city's garment industry, and it became known as the Crowley Building. But the Key Wayden name, well, it continues to persist today because it is displayed in large block letters at the top of the building.
So that's kind of down by where the Winnipeg Goldeye Stadium
exactly
is.
Right.
Okay. So there's a few buildings in that area that would have, of course, been associated with Winnipeg's garment industry in the early part of the 20th century. What's significant about the Key Wayden Building?
Well, it's based on architectural designs that were pioneered in Chicago because the Key Wayden was one of Winnipeg's earliest skyscrapers. You know, it was only 5 years younger than Western Canada's first skyscraper. That distinction belongs to the Union Bank Tower over on Main Street that was built in 1904 that later became the Western headquarters of the Royal Bank and is now home to the Culinary Arts Program of Red River College. The idea of these tall buildings was that they could be built much higher than previous buildings because they had a steel and reinforced concrete skeleton that supported the exterior brick walls. Previous buildings couldn't go much higher than, well, 5 or 6 stories because they lacked internal support. Coming back to the Key Wayden, one of the other distinctions it has is interior windows with wire embedded in the glass and all of its doors being clad with metal.
So lots of modern innovations in a building like this. And I'm sure not only to make the buildings able to accommodate more people and make them taller, but also perhaps to make them more fire resistant.
Exactly right. You know, and we know that fire was a major factor that determined how high a building could be built here in Winnipeg, because in the case of some of the early building fires, the firefighters were unable to fight them effectively because there just wasn't enough water pressure to reach the top of the building. That's why even today, a few of the larger buildings in the Exchange District have water tanks on their roofs to ensure a water supply in the event of a fire. And thanks to concerns about fire that result in the creation of something called fire insurance maps, architectural historians today have remarkable insight into the size, the location, the construction materials, and usage of buildings all around Winnipeg.
Fire insurance maps. Tell us a little bit more about this concept, Gordon. Is it just to keep track of who actually has insurance?
Well, I suppose it was that too, but essentially they were maps prepared for insurance companies that might have to settle claims for damages resulting from fires. Mm. So the companies wanted to know the susceptibility of buildings they were insuring. These maps are richly detailed. You know, they include the dimensions of the buildings, their site relative to nearby buildings. Of course, if there was another building on fire, you'd want to know how likely it was that the neighbors might catch fire, too. These maps include the width of the adjacent streets, the proximity of fire hydrants and fire alarm boxes. You know, bottom line is if somebody wanted to create a three-dimensional view of streets in Winnipeg as they looked, you know, 100 years ago, the fire insurance maps would be an ideal source of information.
Were these fire insurance maps able to be accessed by just anyone? You talk about the neighbors, for instance, wanting to know how susceptible their their neighbors might be to fire. Were these just accessible to the fire department?
The fire department, but also to the fire insurance agents, people who are selling the insurance. Somebody came in and said, I want to insure my building. You know, how much is it going to cost? Well, then they'll look at it and say, oh, your building is made out of wood. Oh, it's going to cost you more. If your building is made out of concrete, oh, rates will come down. So, no, it was only very select groups that could have them, which actually has an impact on their availability today.
I see. I would imagine also that these maps would have to have been pretty well maintained because new policies would have been continually sold. So is it a little bit like the provincial roadmap system that we know?
Well, yeah, of course, the provincial roadmaps are published every year. But, you know, these were so large, you know, they were huge sheets of paper and they were so detailed that each map could only cover just a few city blocks. And so the entire city of Winnipeg, for example, might consist of over 100 of these individual maps. So that was a major undertaking, not like a provincial roadmap. So to save on printing costs for such an extensive collection, when a building was built, in other words, now the map was obsolete, or if the building changed substantially, you know, they added a piece on, for instance, the map companies would simply issue small paper patches that the people who had the maps could glue on top of the old map to update them. Well, eventually, as you might imagine, you know, you'd get patches upon patches eventually. So every few years, they would reprint the entire collection. You know, so in Winnipeg, the earliest fire insurance maps are from 1880, but we have other ones from 1906, 1914, and 1917, and they come right up till the present. I think the most recent one I've seen is from around 1960.
Okay. I would imagine also that these fire insurance maps would have applications in other Manitoba communities as well. Do we know if there are fire insurance maps from other places in the province?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, any place that had fire insurance in theory would have fire insurance maps. You know, they needed to know what the likelihood is of fire. Whether or not those maps still exist is quite another matter. Many have been discarded as the information they contain is available today in other forms. You know, there are online databases that insurance agents can consult. So as far as I know, they don't print these big paper maps anymore.
So if people wanted to see those big paper maps that are a bit of a relic of the past, how can they go about finding them?
Well, some of them have been digitized and are available online, most notably on the website of Library and Archives Canada, you know, the National Archives. Some may be found on other websites. So, for example, on my personal website, I've digitized 18 fire insurance maps for Portage la Prairie from 1914. Incredible detail about Portage back then. And if a person wants to see originals, you know, the paper maps, the best place in Manitoba to find them is the Provincial Archives here in downtown Winnipeg. They have an extensive but unfortunately incomplete collection for 118 cities and towns around Manitoba. You know, most of them, all the biggest towns, for example, have them. But even some small places, there is a fire insurance map, for example, for Elva, Manitoba, down in the southwestern corner, which, frankly, has never really been a very big place. But as far as I know, there is no single comprehensive source for these maps, which is a real shame, given how useful they are.
Certainly. So let's bring it back to the Kuwaitin building in downtown Winnipeg. What do the fire insurance maps reveal about the streetscape in around that particular building?
Well, the south side of the street, the one on which the Kuwaitin building sits, is remarkably the same as it was in 1914. That's the first set of maps that show the building. At the corner of the street were two brick warehouses, one for biscuits and the other for wholesale liquor. Both are still standing today. They're part of the Nutty Club building complex. Toward Main Street was a large office building for the provincial government's telephone service. It's still used by Bell MTS today. Next to it was the Bank of Montreal branch that still dominates the Portage and Main intersection. But the north side of Portage Avenue East in 1914 was radically different from today.
So probably a lot of changes to those fire insurance maps then. How has that part of downtown changed?
Well, where the Richardson building now stands, everything that was there in 1914 is gone. There was a billiards hall, two banks, an auction house, and several smaller buildings. As you walk towards the Gold Eyes Stadium, where today we find the Fairmont Hotel, the Tetra Tech building, and large parking lots, there was a theater, an office building, a flower and feed store, a fire alarm company, a hay storage facility, which probably was simply to feed the horses that were used to pull delivery wagons. There was another billiards hall. Boy, billiards must have been popular in those days. And a large garage.
Well, given the proximity of the fire alarm company to the Kuwaitin building, I would imagine that their standing on a fire insurance map was probably okay, especially with the innovations that were a part of its construction as well. But I got to ask, what is the present day status of the Kuwaitin building?
Well, it operated until early the 21st century. It was given municipal heritage designation in 2017. At that time, there were plans to renovate the building into a hotel. Unfortunately, those plans never came to fruition. The building sat vacant, except, of course, for squatters. And as so often happens in abandoned buildings, it has sustained a fire in 2019 that caused extensive damage to its top two floors. It's been boarded up ever since, but as recently as this past May, there were plans to redevelop the former commercial building as residential space. And therefore, well, we're not really sure what's going to happen. I walked by just the other day and it was still all boarded up. There didn't seem to be anything happening yet. So I would say that the Keewaydin is one of the largest of what I call buildings in limbo in downtown Winnipeg. Great potential, nothing yet.
This might be a bit of a long shot question, Gordon, but given the fire insurance, given the fact that the building has been on fire in the last number of years, what kind of work would have to be done to restore the fire-resistant things in the building to ensure that it could have a future in Winnipeg's downtown?
Well, I'm assuming that the engineers who looked at it after the fire, you know, realized that they could be fixed, or otherwise they might have just said, let's walk away and tear it down. The photos that I've seen after the fire suggest that the damage was isolated to the top floors, and therefore it did minimize the damage. But, you know, inevitably, yes, there is going to be work that's needed to fix it up. But, you know, the reality is the bones are solid. You know, the foundation, the structure is solid, you know, and it's better to use an existing foundation and structure if you can, because that's a lot of the money is, you know. So I would say that the renovations that are needed just to bring it back up into condition are small relative to what it would cost to build an entirely new building. And so I'm really hoping that something can happen here.
Just like the bones of the Keewaydin building, this story that you've brought us this week is also solid. Thank you so much, Gordon, for bringing it to us. What can we expect next week?
Well, the character of Winnipeg's central core has changed profoundly over the past 100 years, not just around the Keewaydin building, too. At one time, it was quite residential. There were houses on most of the streets that today, well, they're all filled with office towers and other commercial blocks. But there are vestiges of the original streetscapes here and there. So next week, we're going to talk about a few former houses that remain in downtown Winnipeg.
Interesting. Can't wait to hear more about them. Thank you so much, as always, Gordon.
We'll talk next week. Bye-bye for now.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.